It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It is time for California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. Tom Simino, the original Sonoma County wine guy, I know that because I named him that officially on the radio in the early 90s, is back with us, along with, of course, my co-host, Dan Berger. Hello, guys.
Hey, hey.
Great to be back.
Always a pleasure. I'm going to let Tom introduce our guests. These are prestigious and iconic folks, and it has to do with Jordan Vineyard and Winery, and it's great to have them all back, Tom.
That's right. We have longtime winemaker, 40 years at Jordan, the only winemaker that Jordan has ever had, Rob Davis. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Lisa Mattson is over here, and she's running around getting the caviar ready. Can you yell over and say hello?
Hi, everyone.
Are you serious?
Happy Wine Wednesday.
We've got caviar?
We do.
Oh, my God.
Jordan's Chef Reserve Caviar by Tsar Nikolai.
I love my job.
$135 bucks an ounce. Do you love me, Jackson?
Yes, of course I do. Rob... More than 40 years?
I started there in 1976.
Good grief. Yeah,
just after graduating from UC Davis.
Now, wait a minute.
He looks pretty good, doesn't he?
He must have been 6 years old.
I was about three at the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Tom Jordan picked me out of a basket coming down the Russian River, and I don't know who my mother is, but anyway.
Wow. That's so impressive. And... again, as Tom mentioned, you hold the rare distinction in California as serving as winemaker at one winery for more than 40 years. And Jordan started in 1972.
Spring of 72 is when the deed was signed off, and actually that's when John Jordan was born. That's just coincidentally. The day he was born was the day that Tom signed the deed for the vineyard.
Wow. Tom and Sally Jordan... according to the website, they were maverick pioneers with a unique vision, and I know that's true. Explain a little more of that and how they came to Sonoma County and founded Jordan Vineyard.
You know, we're well known for, I mean, we do make our Chardonnay and our Cabernet, but Tom at the time was only wanting to make one wine back in 1976, our first vintage, and that was a Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's interesting because at the time, 80% of wine consumption were all white wines, and Alexander Valley was such was so market-driven at that point. You had Gewürztraminer, you had Sauvignon Blanc, you had a Chenin Blanc, you had Muscat Canale. I mean, all these white varietals in a warm red winery area. And now it's predominantly red grapes, particularly Cabernet in Alexander Valley. It does very, very well there, as it should. But Tom was really kind of a maverick that time because as so many of the wineries in Alexander Valley and North Coast, for that matter, were making white wines, Tom wanted to make just one wine, which was unique, just to have a winery make just one wine. But a Cabernet Sauvignon that I would say stylistically was very... aberrant to, I think, what was going on at the time, where ageability was much more of a factor in terms of how a wine was perceived, how our Cabernet was perceived for quality. And Tom's point, I'll never forget, you know, is his little quote. He says, accessibility is far more important than ageability because that's far more practical in terms of consumption. And turns out that I have to say he was right, because when the Wine Spectator ran a poll on consumption habits of Americans, 85% of wine, according to the poll, was consumed within 2 hours of purchase. So the novelty, I mean, I think really is of those who do have cellars and certainly have one. But most people, when they consume a wine, they either go to the store, the bottle of wine they pour, or the restaurant they go to, they order it, and certainly they drink it that night. So the idea that a Cabernet can only be good if it's 10 or 20 years old, Tom was very much against that. So that's our style, is very approachable, elegant, very well-balanced. And
let me ask Dan Berger about that, because I call him the king of the laydown.
Let me stand up and answer that question.
Well, no, as the laziest guy in the world, nap responsibly, my friends. I'm the king of that laydown, but he's the king of the wine laydown.
I really love the Jordan style because it has both worlds in it. Both drink it now or age it. And we've got 20, 30-year-old examples of Jordan Cabernets that have aged beautifully, just gorgeously. But the secret is that Rob has always made the wine so that Mr. Jordan's vision can be maintained, and that is approachability is crucial to the availability of this product so that when you buy it, you don't have to stick it away forever. It does have its ability to open up rather quickly, and the reason is the care that Rob takes at the winery to make sure that it gets proper aging in the Jordan cellars. So when the wine is finally bottled, it's halfway to being ready to drink immediately.
Tom?
I agree. And, again, dual. They go both ways. You can lay them down. I've got some magnums of some older Jordan that we pull out every now and again. Had an 87 a little while back. Just killer. But at the same time, you go to a restaurant and you want to have a perfect bottle of Alexander Valley Cab, the Jordan is a great pick. And don't you win, like, a lot of the number one restaurant wine?
They call it white tables, restaurants, yes, but number one Cabernet in the country, yes.
And the other thing about this wine that's most amazing is that it does age beautifully, but it also is best decanted in the restaurant. And when you go to a fine restaurant and you order a bottle of Jordan Cabernet, if the wine is just not perfectly appropriate, which it generally is, you can get it to be in that basic condition just by asking it to be decanted. And it's a really beautiful wine that way.
Yeah, most people don't know it, but almost every beautiful big red, especially when they're young, is better decanted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I really agree that it seems like you go to a great restaurant, they should have decanters that they could always have for the customer because the wine just, Andre called it, that the wine's been holding its breath all its time, and finally you open the cork and release it. I should preface this, Andre Chelchev, I had a great, really a luxury, as well as Dan Berger. We both have had great experiences tasting with Andre, Dan with on the panels, and me being an enologist and being this protege, learning from my mentor, Andre Chelchev, who, you know, when I met him in 1976, 50 years of experience this man had making wine, and what an incredible experience to work with him. So a lot of what the style of what we've been able to, really the success we've had, I think appropriate to recognize Andre, because this is where we get into ageability, the finesse of these wines, and so my conversation with this is, what is it so required of a wine that you can have a wine that's approachable, as well as have it age so well? And he always talked about balance. He says balance will always dictate the ageability of that wine rather than wines where are so tannin-driven, but the fruit's not there to support it.
We hear the name Andre Chelchev so many times over the last 8 years on this segment, but I like to reset for people who, you know, aren't familiar with that name. So,
Andre Chelchev, yes, 1901, he was born in Moscow. And believe it or not, the Julian calendar, so he always likes to kid joke about it. He lost 13 days of his life when he moved to the United States. I have his immigration card from Ellis Island. It's really,
really
cool to see that, yeah. But he came to this country at a time when, you know, it was 1938, which was after, was really only 5 years after the repeal of Prohibition. And it really is a luxury to be making wine today because the technology, the sanitation, so much of the tools that we have present now were not available back then.
Sure.
And Andre, he said the first thing he wanted to do when he showed up at Beaulieu Vineyards was turn around and go back home, back in France.
Yeah.
He was the only one who had a microscope in all of Napa Valley and actually ran his own lab. But he worked for Beaulieu from 1938 to 1972. He's the one that crafted really the wines that got Tom Jordan's attention, the Beaulieu Vineyard Private Reserve Cabernet, a brilliant wine that he made year after year. And then he went into consulting. And when I met him, like I said, he was 55 years my senior, and I felt like I was the adult. He was the kid. He had so much incredible energy. But I think what's really important, particularly anybody in a craft like we are, where it's artistic, to always have an open mind. And he was always wanting to try something new. And worked so well together. But he mentored so many other winemakers that are making great wines today in California as well. But I think every time you have a glass of California wine, whether it's from a winery that was mentored by the winemaker by Andre, we still owe a lot to him because a lot of the techniques we use today were fathered by Andre Chelchev.
Pretty amazing. We're talking about Jordan Vineyard and Winery established here in 1972. And I have to ask, and John Jordan just showed up. John, good to see you, man.
Good to be here.
It's always a pleasure. I still, I'm not done with Rob yet. now, Rob, before Tom Jordan pulled you out of the river in a basket, how did you become, a master in the wine business?
Well, I went to UC Davis. I grew up in Sacramento, and Davis was really just 12 miles away, and a great pre-med program. And that's what my plans were, to be a doctor. And was taking a lot of the courses, really loved them. But then once I found out, it was my roommate that introduced me to the fact that UC Davis is also a well-known wine university. And so I figured, whatever doctor I become, I want to know more about wine. I started taking the classes and became friends with the professors. There was 300 that we started out in 1972. By the time I graduated in 76, there were only 16 that graduated from my class. There's a lot of science that goes into it that I tend to like. But when it came around to deciding, doing my MCATs and getting the med school, I really decided that what's the most important thing to my life is the lifestyle and the people around it. And I looked at the students I was working with at UC Davis and the Vinology department. I just absolutely, they were my best friends. So that's probably the biggest decision I chose, is to be in the business. And then when I took the job at Jordan, it was going to be an internship for about 6 weeks. And then I met Andre, and the rest is history.
So. Wow. And again, welcome to John Jordan, CEO of Jordan. Good to see you again, as I said.
Good to be back.
you must have known Rob your entire life.
On and off, much. I do. On and off, I do. Rob was literally a towering figure in my life. And I say that both figuratively and literally. Because when you're 4 years old, a grown man is somebody you tend to look up to in so many ways. So literally, I've gotten taller, Rob's gotten shorter. It's hard to know which. But I first remember Rob while carrying a toothbrush, being 4 years old, while the winery is under construction, being introduced to him as Mr. Davis. Rob and I, our lives have been connected for quite a bit of time. And I think our relationship is certain. Well, I'd like to think it grew a little bit since I was four and you were an adult. But I think we've come to have a common understanding of what Jordan is and where it needs to go. Because at the end of the day, Jordan is as much or more Rob Davis than it is me.
After 40 years,
after
plus
40
years.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, what Rob's... How Rob has defined this company in a way that, no matter how long I'm there, I'll never compete with.
Well, actually, John's getting older and I'm getting younger now. So he's going to actually, next year, he'll definitely be older than me.
I like that. I like that. Being an old guy myself.
Well, it is, though. But why have I stayed at Jordan for so long? Andre used to call the winemakers gypsies because they move around so much. But I always felt like this is a, Jordan is like an Eden where you do not want to leave, and it's just been just working with the single ownership, the family of the Jordans. I could not have asked for that.
I believe that. I know. So iconic and so good and so well done for so many years. Now, our first taste is this a Brut Champagne?
Yes, it is a Brut Champagne.
Okay.
And this one is new to me. This is brand new, right, John? Can you explain a little bit about...
Are both those the same?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, and this is for you to see the complete package with the...
With the button?
Because they've only... I guess, Lisa, you've only got like three bottles, four bottles or something like that?
I brought those back from France, and the rest of the champagne arrives on April 30th at the port.
Okay, so. Now we had someone on, I believe with Carissa Cruz, on Off the Vine recently. And by the way, she's normally with us every other Tuesday. Couldn't do it this week, so she'll be with us tomorrow. Anyway, somebody brought in a bottle of sparkling wine from Sonoma County that they can label champagne, which in the past, right, you couldn't do that for the most part.
Well, weren't there a couple of – isn't Gallo one of the grandfathered – they can put champagne on a bottle? I think Gallo is one of them. There might be one other. You know that, Dan?
Yeah, there's about five wineries that are grandfathered in because the California was actually going through prohibition when there was an international conference to ban the use of the term champagne. And California and the United States never signed that treaty. It was called the Methuen Treaty. And that thing was never signed by the United States because we were making no wine at the time by law. Well, as it turned out, that has basically given a free pass to a handful of wineries that are still able to technically use the name Champagne. All the rest of the people are banned from using it.
Right.
And this is labeled Champagne.
Because this is from Champagne.
This is from the Champagne District.
So somebody please explain exactly what's going on with this. John, do you want to be the one?
Well, first of all, you have to look at, the history of Jordan as a company. And as many of you may know, I've been observing the wine scene since the 80s. My dad and sister started J Sparkling Wine,
of course,
J Wine Company, back in the 80s. And as many of you know, my sister Judy, for very understandable lifestyle reasons, chose to sell her company about 2 years ago. But, it was I understood why Judy did it, and it made sense for her. But at the same time, it was a little bittersweet because it had been a sister company, both in this case, literally a sister company. And so it was a little sad for us because even though it wasn't managed, it was different management, different ownership, it was still part of the Jordan story. And if you think about what Jordan is, we like to say we do three things: Cabernet, Chardonnay, and hospitality. And there's no beverage more iconic in the hospitality world than sparkling wine or champagne. And we'll get to other accoutrements about hospitality, like caviar, in a little bit. So it was decided that, one way or another, we can't let this tradition or this part of the Jordan story pass into history. So we reached out. We wanted to be partner up and pair up with a company with similar values that was not corporate-owned, that was small, that was family-owned, where it was still about what was in the bottle and still about the passion and not about the bottom line. And so, but at the same time, we're going to make a style of champagne that was, consistent with who we are and that we thought was quality driven. So Rob Davis, and our director of marketing, Lisa Mattson, were able to uncover this wonderful family, the Lenobles, the brother and sister in France. And I know I'm supposed to be able to pronounce their name, but I can't do French.
Malasagna.
I always struggle with that. So
get the marketing person.
They're actually scuba divers like I am, it turns out, so they have common interests. So we were able to reach, after doing the dance with them, they made a Jordan cuvée for us. It's just for us, and it's a limited quantity. It's truly a partnership, and the packaging reflects that. And we just sell some of it here at the winery, and we use it for our hospitality events. And it's not as much intended as a profit center, although, that's never far from, being a businessman. But it's really intended that this is about passion and about continuing that part of the Jordan tradition. So we're very excited about that. And we'll talk about, the unveiling of that and the release party in a couple of weeks.
Okay, we have to take our break, yep. And we'll come back. And there's so much more to talk about and taste with John Jordan, CEO of Jordan Vineyard and Winery, Rob Davis, the winemaker for more than 40 years. Lisa Mattson is here, Director of Marketing and Communications. The twice awarded California Wine Country segment. We won again this year in Los Angeles for Best Radio Wine Show, basically. Our guest today, Tom Simoneaux, the guy who is the original Sonoma County wine guy. And again, I always say I know that because I gave him that title in the early 90s.
1992.
Yeah, right here on KSRO.
That's right, here.
Yeah.
Wine stains.
And yes, that's how Tom would bring in wine on my Sunday night show called The Entertainment Zone back when we were over on Humboldt and College.
Yep.
And we'd taste wine and then
wine stains all over the table.
Yeah, so
finally Jackson goes, well, how do you like this wine? I said, well, yeah, this is five wine stains because we had wine stains all over.
We didn't want to go stars, four stars or anything. So it would be like, how many stains do you give this?
Five. I give this champagne five wine stains.
Yeah. California Wine Country brought to you by, of course, Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa and Hop Monk in Novato, Sebastopol in Sonoma, and the new Twin Oaks Roadhouse in Penn Grove. Our guest today, along with my co-host every week, Dan Berger. I'm kind of burping because we're eating caviar. We've never had caviar on this show. This is a first, and I'm so excited. The winemaker for more than 40 years at Jordan, Rob Davis, is back with us. John Jordan, the CEO of Jordan, is back with us. And Lisa Mattson, Director of Marketing and Communications,
and
is back
caviar.
With us. And caviar. Lisa, talk about the caviar. I mean, again, I can't believe we're eating caviar on the drive. This is so cool.
So this is another exciting new project for us at Jordan. And 2017 is sort of the year of partnerships for us. And we've been serving caviar at the winery, as John mentioned earlier. Culinary hospitality is a big part of what we do. So caviar has always been part of many of our experiences, and so we've always had a relationship with Tsar Nicolai. They're our favorite producer, the top sustainable caviar maker here in California, based in the Bay Area. And so our chef was talking with their sales director, and he was like, you know, let's do something together. And so there's actually a few different chefs in the Bay Area that are doing this now with Tsar Nicolai. And what Todd Knoll, our executive chef, did is he talked with Tsar Nicolai and said, I want to create some sort of a custom cure that will give this kind of touch of Sonoma County, Sonoma Coast, to the caviar. And when you're making caviar, there's only two ingredients. It's all about the quality of the egg, of the California white sturgeon roe, and then the cure that you use, the salt, and the quality of that. So what Todd did is he went out to the coast, and he collected water from the Pacific, and then he dried that down into a sea salt. So he collected a Sonoma sea salt, and then he also harvested a type of kelp from the Sonoma coast and then dehydrated that at the kitchen at Jordan. Jeez. To make, like, kombu, which is like the Japanese, like, dried seaweed, if you will, and has a lot of minerals and nutrients. And he made a cure out of that. And then they did a couple of different tests of what they liked and then decided to blend that with their reserve-level caviar. So it gives a little bit more of an umami flavor because our cure, it doesn't just have that salt. It also has that seaweed in it. But it's got this little touch of Sonoma for it. And we're going to be serving that at the winery as part of our culinary events, even our tours and tastings. Like right now, our spring pairing for the Chardonnay 2015 is an Ocean Panna Cotta. Has a little bit of the Jordan Chef Reserve caviar on it from Tsar Nicolai. And then we created a new champagne and caviar tasting experience for guests. It's available once you're a member of Jordan Estate Rewards, our loyalty program. It's a silver level and up membership, so it's very easy to get to experience this at the winery once you're a silver member. And then, of course, our Spring at Jordan party next month is going to be very exciting because we've themed the party Belle Epoque. John can talk a little bit more about that. It was his idea. And it's our spring debut party for our new vintages of Chardonnay and Cabernet Sauvignon. But this year, it's also a party to unveil the first Jordan Cuvée by Champagne Air Lenoble and this Jordan Chef Reserve Caviar by Tsar Nicolai.
Okay, and we're trying this Jordan Champagne. Again, John, explain how this works so that we can put you can put the name champagne on these bottles. You're dealing with
Put the name champagne on it because for the simple reason that's what it actually is.
Yeah,
this isn't California sparkling wine where it's grown or made in California where you're subject to those types of rules.
So, but this has to be grown and bottled in France.
In Champagne, in the district.
And it's a true champagne, and it's also co-branded, which is uncommon. So this is not Jordan Champagne, because we're not a champagne producer. This is Brut Champagne by Air Lenoble, and they've created this Jordan Cuvée for us.
Gotcha, okay.
So it's both brands on the packaging, which has its own challenges in and of itself with the U.S. government.
As far as the caviar, during the break, Dan mentioned about the way you're supposed to taste caviar, and I said, yeah, I saw that on Frasier. Ian Niles were going crazy on caviar. Explain that, because I did that, and
it's a change.
I learned this in the 1970s from a wonderful woman who's since passed away. Her name is Rita Leinwand. She was a food and wine critic in the Los Angeles area, and she said, if it's great, caviar, you don't chew it. You put it against the roof of your mouth and just let it melt.
Yeah.
And that's,
does that work?
This is fabulous stuff, partially as a result of the fact that it's not as salty a caviar. Most caviars tend to be saltier than this. And this is a very subtle salt component. So the actual flavor of the roe come through a little bit more clearly as opposed to some of those saltier caviars that tend to be harsher. And this is very subtle, and it works so beautifully with this champagne.
Oh, my
that,
God.
That reminds me of something. With champagne, too, they say that producers of champagne that aren't aging it enough, are not paying attention to their fruit, they can just add more sugar in the dosage.
Precisely.
And hide that. And with our caviar, we're working with Tsar Nikolai, and it's all about the quality of the eggs. And then the cure is the secondary. And with Air Lenoble and their champagnes, they're all about the purity of the fruit, like Rob, aging that wine, or aging that precisely before they add the sugar, and it doesn't really need that much sugar. This is only a dosage of 5 grams.
And your chef had to have been really sensitive to that, because he could have easily allowed this to be saltier, but this champagne doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. This champagne is subtle.
And talk more about this champagne.
Well, this champagne has beautiful breadth of depth of flavor, but it's subtle, so it's not ostentatious. It rather gives you the richness in the mid palate from all that time that it's spent on the lees.
It's a wine that has bubbles.
Exactly.
As opposed to a lot of regular sparkling wine, especially Californian, especially when it's only 1 year on the yeast. It's bubbles. You know, it's bubbles.
And you taste the age of the wine in the aftertaste of this champagne. Congratulations,
guys.
Mm. And Rob, did Tom say 4 years on yeast?
Yeah, another focus that Andre brought to me is focusing on the finish, the memory of the wine, and this just is where you wake up the next morning and you can still taste it. And this is just incredible. I love the champagne.
It is unbelievable, and as I always say, I'm not a big sparkling wine guy.
We just spent 45 minutes. We're here. We are with Jordan Winery in Alexander Valley.
We still have the Chardonnay to go.
Cabernets and, the Cabernet I'm like in heaven with. And we spent 45 minutes of a one-hour show on sparkling wine and caviar. I guess that's allowable.
Hey. Is that okay? Yeah. And to all my listeners, sorry. okay, we're going to try one of my favorite wines in the world, which I have quite often. It is a Jordan Chardonnay, and I can't wait for this. Did you bring another bottle, by the way? So I can take home? I'm going to make chicken tonight.
Well, don't drink all of this one.
This year is going to be the 32nd harvest that Rob has made this wine exclusively from Russian River Valley fruit.
Really?
So, yeah, this is the first 32 years of Russian River Valley.
I could not be more excited about an appellation like Russian River because it's... Chardonnay is a very early maturing variety. It requires, you don't find Cabernet in Burgundy, nor do you find Chardonnay in Bordeaux. And I think when we first started making the Chardonnay, Tom Jordan felt it was so important to have ownership control. The husbandry was so important to him. So we shared both Cabernet and Chardonnay in the same appellation, and it really was a testament to Judy, when she started the Jay Sparkling Wine Program. She went to the Rush River because that appellation was much more appropriate for Chardonnay and the Pinot Noir that she used for her sparkling wine. And when she had an excess of fruit in 1988, her second year, she offered it to our Chardonnay program, and it took like a nanosecond to figure out we were in the wrong place in Alexander Valley. So we started. It took almost 10 years to be able to get 100% Chardonnay in Russian River. And Chardonnay is a very, I should say, the Russian River is a very diverse appellation. You've got so many different soil types and then little microclimates within the microclimate. But where we are with our Chardonnay is some incredible spots that develop a beautiful acidity, but also this freshness. It's like Fuji apple characteristic I love so much about Russian River Chardonnay. But I think the key is not to overdo it. Let the fruit express itself and to avoid, I think, the using your muscularity in the cellar to manipulate that wine where the cellar dictates the wine. You want the appellation, you want the fruit, you want the vineyard to dictate that style. And that's what we're allowing to do. We have very little malolactic in this, about 20%. And each year we've been finding ourselves going less and less each year because we like the freshness and the natural acidity that comes through this wine. But so you don't get a lot of buttery characteristics. We purposely focus on making sure that there's oak doesn't become dictating the aroma and palate. So you get this lively fruit, and I think one of the best compliments I hear about our Chardonnay, without you know me going and asking people, is when John invites our master sommeliers throughout the country to come and visit our winery and stay, and they have a lot of fun. But they'll come up to me and they say, "God, your Chardonnay really, I can't say this on the radio, but it upsets them." That's the best I can say. And I said,
I can see why.
And literally a tear comes to my eyes, "You don't like our Chardonnay?" He goes, no, our job is to be able to taste a wine blind and figure out where it comes from. And every time we taste a Chardonnay blind, we think it's a Pouligny. Well, then the other tear starts coming out of my eye. I go, "That's what we're trying to do," because I love the Poulignys. They're a direct composite of what the soil and the climate expresses, that the terroir, what expresses that fruit, without again overdoing it in the cellar. And I love those wines. They're such a seduction to the palate and the nose, and that's what we're trying to do with our Chardonnay.
Well, I got to say that the last time I tasted a Jordan Chard, I remember saying, "This is the greatest Chardonnay I've ever had," and I'm a major Chardonnay guy. And I don't
this could
know.
Be better.
I don't. Mm. Yeah, it probably wasn't the 2015.
No, this is brand new. Yeah,
okay, this
April 1st.
This is the greatest Chardonnay I've ever tasted.
You've really done something here, Rob.
No, thank you.
Really,
Dan Berger, your thoughts?
Jordan Chardonnay, since '88, when they began moving into the Russian River Valley, started establishing a new persona for Chardonnay that exhibits not only Russian River fruit but also the subtlety that Andre always wanted in their wines. Now, Andre didn't do much malolactic fermentation of Chardonnay, probably never. Mm-hmm. But his idea was to make these wines seamless, and that's the word that comes to mind when I taste this wine. It's seamless. It has fruit up front. It fruit in the aftertaste. The mid-palate is sublime.
Yeah.
It is absolutely Pouligny Montrachet to an nth degree.
Mm. I wish I could say I've had enough of those to go, "Oh, this is exactly what it is." But if that's what you say, I'm right there with you. This one, to me, this one is like if you take a picture, right, a painting, the fruit is the painting, and then the other complexities around it are the frame. So you've got this beautiful picture of the wine framed with minerality and just a little bit of oak. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of a slate, little apple.
Well, that Fuji apple he referred to. Yeah. It's not Granny Smith. It doesn't have the same acid structure. Mm-hmm. But what it has is this mid-palate of richness and acid combined, so that there's no, you don't know where one starts and the other ends.
My palate's not good enough to say distinguish between Fuji and any other kind of apple, but I'm definitely getting apple in
okay.
the mid.
Yeah. Well, you know, it tastes like it's older than 15.
Yeah, it does taste about 4 years old.
Yeah, wow. I mean, this wine, you put some age on this guy.
This
I know you
great.
Like to age him. I do, too.
Yeah, this
oh, you get a few years
special
on this.
Wine.
Rob Davis, you're a genius.
Oh, well.
Which is why you've been at Jordan for more than 40 years.
John, I think he needs a raise.
Putting me on the spot.
By the way, Mike and I just discussed this, and we're changing totally the format of California Wine Country. From now on, every Wednesday, it'll be these folks with Jordan Wines and Caviar. No other wineries need apply. Wow. It's California Wine Country, the twice awarded show in Los Angeles for great radio. What can I say? We're very proud of that. Our guest today, along with my co-host Dan Berger, the great wine guy Tom Simino, who joins us once a month with all sorts of special things. And, boy, today is maybe the specialist ever. Oh, more caviar. Oh, God bless you, Lisa.
You get the last of it, Jackson. The host of the show gets the last.
Mm-hmm. That's a rule when it comes to caviar, even though this is the first caviar we've ever had.
On the show. It's a new tradition.
John Jordan is here, the chief executive officer of Jordan Winery and Vineyard. Lisa Mattson, our friend, director of marketing and communications and head of Caviar. And the winemaker who's been at Jordan for more than 40 years, Rob Davis. This is some of the greatest wine I've ever tasted, and it usually is when it comes to Jordan. I got to ask, the Jordan 2015 Chard, which we're all raving about, what's the price point on that, Lisa?
32 at the winery, but that's not necessarily where you'll see it on a wine list in a restaurant. So generally, sure. On a wine list, you'll see it in the mid-60s.
Yeah. Okay. So go to the winery, I mean, folks, because this is...
the price point, you know, there's the at the winery, and then sure. There's on-the-shelf retail, and then there's... And then there, of course, is wine list, and about 2-to-1 our wine is sold in a restaurant.
Yeah,
and let me just
32 for this.
I know 32.
That's what you can buy it for at JordanWinery.com.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think people need to go to JordanWinery.com, and if you can, you know, if you're looking to get on a wine club opportunity, you should jump all over Jordan. If you've ever been invited to one of their events, and you've got one coming up May 13th, and it's going to have the cab, the shard, the champagne, and the caviar?
Yeah, May 13th is our annual Spring at Jordan event, and it's 2 to 5, and tickets just went on sale today, and my information is they're going pretty fast. And this year's the theme is the Belle Epoque, which is turn of the century France, you know, 1901 cool. France and Paris. And we thought that was appropriate, an appropriate context for the unveiling of the caviar and the Jordan Air Lenoble champagne. And it's an homage to, you know, the many points, the great part of the Edwardian era in France. So we thought that would be a lot of fun and a fun way to introduce these new additions to our family. And so anyway, so the tickets are on sale at JordanWinery.com, but they're going pretty fast. So hopefully we'll see hear some of your listeners there.
I'm telling you, if you go, you will be very happy that you went. You'll probably sign up for the wine club and the whole nine yards. Once you go there, I mean, it's a chateau. It's beautiful.
It is.
It's 1 mile from my house, too. So when I go, I don't have to worry about getting home. I can walk.
As soon as you buy a ticket, you're already signed up. Since we don't have a wine club, it's just the loyalty program.
So it's the loyalty.
You buy a ticket to Spring at Jordan, you already have points, and you can save up those points to redeem.
Oh, that's how they do that.
Well, tell everyone where you are in Alexander Valley. And
the 1474 Alexander Valley Road. And it is just to the mile and a half to the west of the Russian River Bridge on Alexander Valley Road, Highway 128.
And a mile and a half from Healdsburg Avenue and Alexander Valley Road.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
That's exactly what it is.
Rob Davis, winemaker for more than 40 years at Jordan. Tell us about this next wine.
So we have a new released 2013 Cabernet. And I thought all my dreams had been come to fruition, fulfillment, I should say, when the 2012 vintage came along. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when does a winemaker decide when you've got a great vintage? You know, and I always look at the growing season, but I look at the springtime. The springtime really is the mirror. The harvest really is the mirror of the spring. So in spring is when your fruit is set. It's when the balance is set in the vine. And then you hope for just a good growing season to nurture those vines all the way to when we pick them. And then the winemaking, you know, as important as it is, it really is the fruit that's so critical, I think, to a great vintage. In 2012, I remember looking at John, and I was absolutely giddy. Our team, Maggie Cruz and John Duckett, we were out in the crush pit, and every time we dropped a gondola of grapes, it was like sensory overload. We just were absolutely ecstatic. And I looked at John and said, John, it doesn't happen like this. I've never seen a vintage like 2012. It's just phenomenal. Well, then 2013 happened, and if you've been a sports fan and I'm a big Giants fan, two back-to-back World Series just doesn't happen, and that's what I thought 13 was. 13 was everything 12 is, and actually I think in some ways a little bit more. There's more structure than the 12. 12 is seamless, but the 13, I think, in terms of ageability, has even more promise than the 12, which 12 already has a lot of promise. But it has so much black fruit to it, so much cassis, which I think is the essence of Cabernet. And then one of the things that I think John and I worked together on is moving to where we started. I should say back at the beginning with the history of the winery, we were 50% French oak, 50% American oak when we started, and a lot had to do with Tom's love of the Beaulieu Vineyard Private Reserve, which is all American oak, but also trying to be a French statement in addition. So we split kind of the in between the middle, having half and half, and as we started getting more and more defined, much more. More depth of fruit, then we found the French oak really responded much better in terms of mollifying the tannins and giving much richer, much better mid-palate, but the length of the wines were just broader to the point where all of a sudden, you know, particularly with our fruit selection now, when the 13 came along, we looked at the possibility, what would this wine be if we were 100% French oak? And all of us, our whole wine team, you know, a lot of things where we decide we can argue about back and forth because what we're dealing with is a very subjective science. But all of us looked at each other and said, oh, my God, we need to go more French oak. And to the testament of John Jordan, which he had to, I mean, basically he's in charge of the budget, and I said, this is going to cost more for us to go to French oak. French oak is three times the cost of American oak. So us to go all French oak was definitely a commitment of the pocketbook. But we're all about, I love the statement, the mantra statement of John Jordan's is, every day's got to be better than the last day. And this is what we're trying to do to make this decision is to stay within the style of Jordan with approachability, you know, the finesse of this wine, the elegance of this wine, but in particularly the way the tannins respond much better to the French oak really answers to the style we're all have always been after.
We're way over time here, but I don't care. Lisa Mattson, Director of Marketing and Communications for Jordan Vineyard and Winery. John Jordan, the CEO, and for more than 40 years, the winemaker, Rob Davis. I wish we had time to hear from both Tom and Dan about this cab, but unfortunately...
Bullseye.
One word, Dan, on the cab?
Perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, all three of you, and thanks, Tom, and thanks, Dan, as
you
always.
Bet.
Thank you, Brad.
Great stuff, and thanks for the caviar. It made my year. And we'll see you folks again soon, hopefully.
Harvest Lunch, we see Tom's every year at Harvest Lunch.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, Harvest Lunch.
Yeah, Dan comes
yeah we'll do it again. Definitely. Okay. Thank you so much, Tom. Good job.
Adios.
We'll be back next Wednesday with Dan Berger. Any thoughts on Dan? Or do you know what we're
more
doing?
Pinot Noir next week.
Really?
Oh, yep.
No Chardonnay?
Well, there's one Chardonnay, yes.
Okay.
Always.
I love the Pinot,
Dan
too.
Dan is learning.